Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Something you should know about coal in Montana and our area: the Powder River Basin supplies roughly 40% of U.S. coal production. So it was bad news for many when the Biden administration restricted nearly 2 million acres from coal leasing in the Powder River Basin. That should be changing, could be changing. Montana Energy is back. We'll talk about that with a person who's helping change that. That's Montana's Troy Downing. We'll also put healthcare on the plate. I think that's going to be a tough decision to talk about here. But here's another stat. Approximately 90% of U.S.-bound cocaine moves through maritime waters before it gets to the United States or land anywhere. We'll talk about that policy as well, public safety, with Congressman Troy Downing. Our congressman for the 2nd District, Eastern Montana, joins us now. Good morning, Troy. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Doing great. Back in D.C., not my favorite spot, but this is where the work's happening. So happy to be serving.
You know, and I appreciate you coming on here, too, and talking about the stuff that you do. There's a lot of things that weigh heavy. For me, I think our healthcare discussion weighs heavy. I like what the president's doing in terms of protecting our country in these international waters, too. And those are big policies. But there's, you know, these little things to talk about. I mean, one thing on the plate here is the Glendive Fish Passage, getting the government to pay for it like it says it will. And then when the Biden administration restricted those acres from coal leasing in the Powder River Basin, that was really not a good energy policy for this country. And you guys are doing something about that.
Yeah, we are. You know, the previous administration, the Biden administration, was absolutely hostile in American energy dominance, and especially, you know, our natural resource energy, our fossil fuel energy. And so the Miles City field office, they basically passed an RMP, a resource management plan, that was very adversarial to continuing to produce coal. And, you know, it's important to Montana. We've got, some of the largest, actually the largest coal supply in the country. And it's not just the amount, but it's clean. It's the cleanest coal. It's you know, low sulfur. It's high BTU. This is good energy right here. And so what I did, with the help of my colleagues here, is we passed HJ Resolution 104, and that's a CRA, Congressional Review Act, which is basically congressional disapproval of the Biden administration's complete foreclosure on mining coal in the Powder River Basin. And so we got that passed through the House. We got it passed through the Senate. And this week we expect the president to sign that, which will undo the restrictions on mining coal on that federal land. So I'm really excited about that, because it's not only part of our, energy dominance, plan for the United States, which is important not just to our economy but to our national security, but it's very meaningful to Montana. It's revenue coming in. It's something that's meaningful to the treasure state. And so I'm really excited that we're going to get this signed by the president this week. And just to tie a bow on this, what this is, because there's been a lot of, questions on the how this is done through a CRA, a Congressional Review Act, mm-hmm. which is a tool we have to get it through Congress with a simple majority in both chambers. So it's one of the few things that we can do, reconciliation bills and CRAs. There's a few things we can do with a simple majority and not needing that 60-vote majority in the Senate. But it's basically saying this is congressional disapproval of the Biden administration's RMP, and so it'll undo that and basically make it so that they can't redo that, so it's not fungible in a future administration. So we're really excited about getting that done. It's going to be meaningful for the state. Expect to be in the White House this week to watch the president sign it. I'm very excited about that.
That's very cool, because I think if people go back and look at that process, that the administration did it unilaterally. There was no discussion with the energy interests. There was no discussion with the public interests. It was very much a special interest move there as well. That had an impact, or could have certainly had a very large impact on many of us here too. So talk about where that discussion is about our energy policy once again. I know a lot of people have said it's an all of the above policy. I think
Here's the thing. If I can butt in there for
go
a second,
ahead.
Tom.
Yeah.
Yes, it is all of the above, and I think that we need to continue to promote all of the. Humans are very innovative, and we're going to find better, cleaner, more efficient, cheaper ways of doing things if left to our own devices. And so I think exploring other types of energy is something that we need to do. We need to have that part of the conversation.
Yep.
But we can't ignore the energy that's right underneath our feet right now in terms of, being competitive, not just in making sure that families have the ability to pay their, power bills and keep their homes warm and keep their cars moving and all that stuff. I'm sure a lot of your listeners, this has been a big discussion on how we continue to be innovative in digital assets and artificial intelligence. And that is something that we need to make sure that we can power. And we need to keep looking at how we're going to power it, because we're at a deficit right now in being able to power that. We need to be very thoughtful in how we do that without having a negative effect on families and small businesses in Montana, but still have the ability to innovate and be competitive, because we have the base thing that we need to be competitive in the digital age is the ability to power it. And so that is all the above. We need to keep, pulling coal out of the ground. We need to burn gas. We need to burn oil. We need to do everything. But that doesn't mean that we're, not looking at, all the other alternatives, because humans will continue to be innovative. And maybe in, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that starts to, be a different part of the equation. But right now, we cannot ignore the energy that we're standing on right now.
I appreciate that, because I think AI has actually been a part of what is changing the landscape, is what I was getting at, about the discussion on climate warming and carbon and its impact in that regard. And so I am encouraged by that. And I think this administration has helped in that regard as well. I mean, getting the truth is really hard for us in the public too. So, just to see others out there kind of recognizing that, our agenda is maybe exposed, and now there's more public, I think, interest in trying to move through this. Do you have anything else on energy? I mean, there's a lot to it, and there's a lot on the plate here as well. So maybe go into what you're doing with AI too, because
that's an interesting one, because that's actually we have a hearing coming up on that this week in the Financial Services Committee. I sit on the Digital Assets Subcommittee on there, and really, there's so much stuff. I have. First of all, I have a bill, the AI Wise Act,
yeah,
that is going to help small businesses. It's going to help them through the SBA in having resources to understand how they can use it, if they should use it, how it might affect them. Because one of the things that really concerns me is, in terms of artificial intelligence, the bad actors are adopting it a lot faster than the small businesses. And so we need to make sure that they have the tools to, inform themselves. And so the AI Wise Act that I've introduced, it's not costing any money. There's no additional appropriations. It's using existing resources under the SBA, but it's directing them to make available educational information on small businesses so they can figure out how to navigate this. I've talked about this on your show before. Artificial intelligence is really exciting in what it can do, and it's probably one of the most meaningful or impactful things that we're probably going to talk about in the near future, because it's going to impact the way we do business. It's going to impact the way we communicate. It's going to impact the way that we learn. It's going to have so much stuff out there, and that part of it is very exciting, but it's also pretty scary, because you don't know exactly where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just met with with the CEO of NVIDIA. We had a meeting with him at the Library of Congress a couple of days ago, and just talking about how we continue to be innovative and to be competitive against our adversaries in this space. And it was a really interesting conversation. And he was talking about this being one of the tools of really re-industrializing the United States. And he had a lot of interesting comments about how he believes, and this is the CEO of the most valuable company on the planet, the most valuable company that's ever existed on planet Earth. And he's saying that, you know, President Trump took it on the chin with his pro-energy policies in the beginning. And he said in 5 years, the world's going to look back and thank him for it.
Yeah.
Because we need to be competitive. We need to power this. We need to be able to keep moving forward. And he was talking about how that's going to shift requirements in small businesses, not eliminate them. Because one of the fears you hear is how many jobs is going to get rid of. And, you know, not to sound like a Luddite, but there's been, you know, concerns I've had about technology displacing workers. But he was talking about the shift and how important it is to still have people that can build and fix things, you know, build and repair. He says that, you know, we're starting to push out more and more, you know, PhDs. He says we don't need any more PhDs. We don't need any more lawyers. We need people that can actually, you know, build and fix things. And this is going to be one of the catalysts that starts really reindustrializing the United States rather than sending everything abroad like we've done over the last several decades at our, you know, at our potential demise. So I'm really happy that people are talking about that.
Yeah, me too. You know, we've for the longest time, everybody's been told to ignore the plain and simple math on supply and demand when it comes to energy. And I think affordable energy makes us a very resilient economy and very strong a country as well. Montana Congressman Troy Downing is with us. Downing.house.gov. He represents our 2nd Congressional District, first term there as well. A veteran, an entrepreneur, an educator, former state auditor as well. Served in the Air Force and Air National Guard as well. And this was after 9/11 too. So appreciate that. House Financial Services Committee, as you mentioned too, and Small Business Committee. Let's a couple of things here. We'll run out of time. I only got like about 10 minutes here. And I know I want to pick up this fish passage thing because we followed the creation of this canal past the intake dam. This is north of Glendive in that Glendive-Sydney area. I think it's pretty familiar with a lot of people. What is the, you know, what's the issue here that we you're addressing?
Well, basically, this is just telling the federal government to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, this Wednesday, I'll be introducing the Lower Yellowstone River Native Fish Conservation Act. And, you know, really simple. It reaffirms that the United States Bureau of Reclamation retains the exclusive ownership, operational control, and most importantly, the financial responsibility for the Lower Yellowstone Fish Bypass Channel. And that's, as you mentioned, near Glendive. So, you know, this was built to support the recovery of the pallid sturgeon. It imposes no obligations on the local irrigation district. It protects irrigators from future cost shifting. It codifies federal responsibilities. So it's something that we need to address. So I'm bringing this up this Wednesday to make sure that the BOR is doing what they're supposed to do, and it's not going to sap the resources of the local communities that are affected in Montana, and make sure that we're protecting what we have agreed to protect.
Yeah, and the, you know, that is something that's needed because we have seen with you know, the St. Mary's conveyance as well, that a lot of that cost for the repair has fallen on the local landowners,
and that's a huge problem. And anybody who's ever done any kind of business, you know, I spent some time doing commercial real estate, and one of the things we used to always talk about was deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance, if you're not on top of it, it's an easy way to take a, you know, $1,000 problem and turn it into a $100,000 problem because you're not dealing with it as it starts to be a maintenance issue, and it becomes a failure issue, like we've seen on the whole Milk River watershed, not just the St. Mary's siphon, but we've got so much infrastructural issues there because we haven't dealt with it. And as you mentioned, have really put a lot of that burden on the local irrigators there. So we need to solve that problem because obviously the irrigators along the High Line depend on that, and we need to make sure that we're dealing with that. So I've got another bill, you know, in the hopper on that I've been really working on trying to get some traction on, which is the Northern Montana Water Security Act that deals with some of the infrastructural issues with the St. Mary's. So been working with my colleagues Actually, the Western States Caucus just had a congressional delegation meeting this weekend, and so we were talking about a lot of those issues. And I was, you know, that was one of the issues that I was talking about, making sure that we're dealing with our natural resource and water and agricultural issues in central and eastern Montana.
Is there something on the floor too, or are you introducing something regarding education? Rural schools.
Yes, actually, that's another big one.
Yeah.
So that's the Secure Rural Schools. So this is basically, it's legislation to reauthorize the SRS program, Secure Rural Schools.
Yeah.
And that's going to be on the House floor this week. And this was originally authorized in 2000 with the enactment of the SRS and Community Self-Determination Act. And really simply, this provides payments to county governments in areas where forests are located, because counties, they don't receive tax revenue from the federal land. So these payments come through timber receipts and other revenue-generating activities from U.S. National Forests to make sure that we are supporting rural schools. And education, I mentioned this on your show before, is incredibly important to me. And making sure that we are funding rural education is a huge priority. So, you know, happy to see that this is going to be seeing the light of day here very shortly, because it's important to, you know, the large part of my district, obviously being central and eastern Montana. And, you know, this is one of the big things that, you know, that I'm trying to really address in rural Montana, is make sure that we're dealing with rural education, we're dealing with rural health care, and that we're dealing with agriculture. So, you know, these are kind of big priorities for me.
A couple of minutes left here, and, you know, these issues are a little bit heftier on my plate, so to speak, or I think on the world's plate. But I do appreciate what the president is doing and sending a strong message, because drugs, fentanyl, they are a scourge on our communities, on our country. There's a lot of things we have to do to kind of fix core issues there as well. But one thing we can do that helps an awful lot is keep them off the streets.
Oh, absolutely. And that's such a huge issue in Montana. Mm-hmm. Is I travel around talking to law enforcement, you know, across the state, in rural communities and in our, you know, more heavily populated communities, in our, you know, native communities. You know, this is a big deal. I mean, this is almost, you know, actually, I think this exceeds the scale of being at war. If you look at the actual, you know, deaths and injuries that have happened from synthetic opioid deaths. I mean, in 2024, we had 80,000 deaths that were attributed to synthetic opioid use. About 50,000 of these, were attributed to, 80,000 with synthetic opioid deaths. And it's such a huge number. This should not be a partisan issue. This is something that is a national issue. We need to deal with it, because we're seeing people, you know, injured and killed by this abuse. And I think that we need to take, you know, very strong action. And, you know, even if you talk about, you know, this being a bipartisan issue, if you look at, we just had the HALT Act that we passed in the House earlier this year, and we had almost 100 Democrats who joined the Republicans to pass that HALT Fentanyl Act, and that permanently classifies all fentanyl-related substances as a Schedule I drugs under the Controlled Substances Act. So that's a start to this. And it bugs me that as we try to deal with this really kind of, you know, this war with drugs here, that it has, the messaging is started to lean to be partisan, because it's not a partisan issue. This is something that is affecting every community, every party, everybody in this country, and definitely people in my district. So I think we need to be very serious on what we do to stop that flow of drugs, make sure we don't have cartels working in Montana. You know, we've done a good job. This administration does a great job at dealing with our, you know, invasion at the southern border. So now we need to start to look at other ways that they're making it onto our shores, make sure that we're stopping that and address this, because Americans are dying and we need to stop that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, that's just an easy enough focus. I mean, there's a myriad of issues that complicate this, but getting those illicit drugs off the streets is a big step towards solving this. We got maybe just a couple of minutes here, too. So I know in your previous job, a state auditor, commissioner of securities and insurance as well, you're familiar with health care. The health care discussion is not over in this country. In fact, it's really going to begin a lot more in earnest here very shortly. What, you know, and it's not a two-minute conversation, but can we have a full-on grown-up conversation there? And what are some of those solutions that you like, having experience in the industry, that can move us more toward healthcare reform and not just insurance reform? Because Obamacare didn't reform that or insurance.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a subject of a much larger conversation, but I'm just going to make a couple of points about this. You know, first of all, the Affordable Care Act was ironically named because nothing has caused health care costs to rise more than the Affordable Care Act. I mean, I hear the more recent moniker of the Unaffordable Care Act, and it's simple to understand. You know, even somebody that's not, you know, an expert in health care or health insurance can understand why. I mean, the Affordable Care Act, you know, added a bunch of essential health benefits, so it added a bunch of, you know, required coverages, and then they said that the costs were going to go down. And anybody knows if you add something to your shopping list, it doesn't make the costs go down. You've now got something else to pay for. And I'm, you know, not taking a position on that being right, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just going to say that it was a false bill that was sold to the American people saying that would cause things to go down, because clearly it didn't. And what happened is that, you know, as one would expect, made premiums go up. And as premiums go up, healthy people came off. And as that healthy people come off, that concentrates the risk. So it makes the expenses for the insurance company go higher. So that makes their premiums go up. And you create this endless cycle. So that's what we're at right now. It's called adverse selection. So we've got this cycle of adverse selection where the more expensive it gets, the more healthy people come off. The more healthy people come off, the more expensive it gets. And so we need to start looking at, you know, first of all, how we get healthy people to decide to be on insurance again. You know, a lot of them are moving to healthcare sharing ministries or just going uninsured. They're going a lot of different directions. So first of all, figure that out and then start dealing with some of the cost drivers. Why is healthcare getting more expensive? Why is, you know, one of the biggest drivers in covered costs right now is the cost of prescription drugs? And we dealt with that when I was the state auditor, and you know, we sponsored a bill for the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit manager, kind of middlemen in that cycle, and we had our transparency bill there. But there's still so much work to be done in that space. I think that, you know, one of the things that President Trump has suggested, and I think it's a great idea, is the most favored nation status for the United States in terms of prescription drugs. And for folks who don't understand that, what that means is it basically means if you sell something less or you have a better deal for someone else, then if you have most favored nation status, you are guaranteed to get the same deal. So it means if you're selling it for cheaper in another country, you have to offer that same price in the United States. And, you know, my simple answer to why that is something that's good is the United States of America, this is where the innovation is happening. This is where the R&D is happening. This is where we are doing all that research and development. We're paying for that. I think that we should receive the benefits for the product. And I think that that's one small piece of how we start dealing with this.
Nice. That's a ton of topics in 22 minutes. And I know we got to roll. Thank you so much, Congressman Troy Downing, for your public service and for chatting about it here.
Yeah. If you have any questions.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. It is downing.house.gov. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.